with Adam Gilchrist is brought to you by Emirates. Fly Emirates first class and business class and experience a new level of comfort.
The eyes to the right, 202. The nose to the left, 432.
Everybody say after me, and they run a country. Okay. Well, welcome to the Emirates Worldview. Adam Gilchrist in London, and that's pretty much what we're going to be chatting about. Very good morning to you, sir. Good having you on the show this morning.
It's a big deal, as headlines in papers around the world are talking about a historic defeat.
Oh, yes.
Or historic humiliation. Dismay is one of the headlines, which I think has been done before, but you know. Yeah. So we had the vote, and as we heard, defeat by 230, which is a record for any British government, beating the previous one of 1924. So from that defeat, the Prime Minister now has until Monday to come up with a Plan B. Well, Plan A took blooming ages, so quite how Plan B will work. But actually, it's interesting because Boris Johnson, who after all is a Brexiteer and absolutely wants us out of the European Union, he suggests that this actually strengthens Theresa May's hand, that she can go back to the EU and say, look, help me out. If you shift on this, if you shift on that, if you wiggle on the other, then we could actually make a Plan B. We could come up with something that might be acceptable. Don't ask me why that would happen now when it didn't happen before.
Yeah.
But the thought is that this, it's brickmanship, I suppose, that this might do it. At the same time, though, we know that there's now a no-confidence vote going to be taken later in the House of Commons. The Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, tabled it in the government, and essentially it is possible, whilst generally speaking you don't expect government MPs to vote against their own government in a confidence vote, but it is possible if the Democratic Unionists don't support them and everyone else gangs up, and maybe one or two mavericks, et cetera, that Theresa May could lose that. If she loses the confidence vote, then I think she's out.
Well, the chances of that happening, though, are pretty slim. I mean, these are MPs who also like getting their salaries, right? Plus, they need to be united as a party. They're going to fight a general election. So the chances of them voting themselves, and that's essentially what will happen. If there's a vote of no confidence, you're staring a general election in the face.
Yes, that's true.
So,
you would think that would happen, yes. It would do turkeys vote for Christmas. It would be the argument, yes, absolutely.
Well, exactly.
And you would think probably not, but also interesting that, I mean, there's so many comments in the lead up to this vote. 5 days of fevered debate in the House of Parliament in London. Mm. Plenty of comments about how a failure to leave the European Union would be a breach of trust and undermine democracy. That essentially, if we reneged on the referendum result, then it would be a terrible thing. A little bit of digging, didn't take terribly much either, actually, I have to say. And this actually is more common than you think. The French and Dutch both had referendums on the European Constitution. The people said no, so they changed the wording a little bit, didn't call it a constitution, called it a Lisbon Treaty, and the governments put it through anyway without asking the people again. So the people had said no, but the government said yes and went ahead with it. Ireland vetoed the Lisbon Treaty, but was under pressure from all around because essentially everyone had to agree to it. So a year later, they had another referendum, and lo and behold, they agreed it. Greece voted against austerity measures imposed by the European Union, Germany in particular. The government said, yeah, we're not having that. We're going to put them in anyway. In fact, we're going to put in even more stringent austerity measures, even though the people had voted against it.
Yeah, but we know what happened to Greece.
Well, there is that. I guess it's still happening to Greece.
Yeah.
They're not completely dead in the water. Mm. And Scotland voted against independence 5 years ago, and yet at almost every turn, somebody in the Scottish Nationalist Party will mention how we should have a second referendum and how the Scottish people should absolutely get their vote again and so forth. So, in other words, there are all sorts of precedents for you keep having a go with referenda until you get the right result.
Yeah. Keep putting it in front of them until they vote the way you'd like them to.
Yes, I say the right results, yes, from the MP's point of view, because we know that three quarters of MPs essentially wanted to remain. But, of course, that's now shifted over a period of time because of all the politics and all the posturing and everything else. So we've got another very hot day in Parliament and this confidence vote at the end of the day, and we could be in uncharted territory in 24 hours.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to our chat a bit later. We've got Richard Swart, who's the Vice President of the North England Chamber of Commerce, former South African, by the way, chatting to us a bit later about all of this from a business perspective. And what does a no-deal Brexit then mean? It means that if you are British and you're working in the European Union, there's nothing that protects you. If you're European and you're working in Britain, there's nothing to protect you. What are some of the other ramifications?
Well, including just something as simple as, let's say, a company currently imports widgets from Spain. They take an order of widgets every month, and through they come, through customs, no problem. In the future, that may have to be checked. There may have to be a levy. There may have to be a duty. It certainly will be looked at closely. So suddenly that widget supply might not happen as readily and as smoothly. So the moment you've got problems with supply and production, you then have problems with your business. And if you multiply that by, you know, millions across the UK and the European Union, and of course it doesn't just affect Britain. It's not just us carping on, saying, oh no, we're going to be sunk. There are plenty of European businesses who are looking at this thinking, oh no, what does it mean for us? We absolutely rely on Brits to do this or a British company to do the other. So the ramifications, frankly, for trade, travel, immigration, residency, pensions, you name it, they are enormous.
And just explain to us very briefly this Irish border backstop.
Yes, essentially what that is that we have this unsolvable problem. The border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland currently is an open border because we're both in the European Union. Come the withdrawal from the EU, that can't be the case. So how can we have a nice open border that was thought about in the Good Friday Agreement that keeps parties like the IRA away from blowing people up? How can we have that, but also at the same time a border whereby people and goods can be checked? Because suddenly we're not meant to have free flow, we're meant to have limits on immigration and so forth. So the backstop is this temporary measure whereby everyone says, well, we'll pretend that it's fine for a little while and it's an open border, but it's only in the short term. Everyone acknowledges that it can't possibly be long term because ultimately that would carve Northern Ireland off. And an awful lot of politicians in Northern Ireland do not want to be separate to the rest of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on this one. I'll put my money on the government surviving this no-confidence vote simply because, like politicians around the world, they're all selfish. They all like their salaries. They don't want to go without. And, and I reckon status quo will remain. And I reckon at the end of the day, there will be no deal.
No deal, same government, possibly the same Prime Minister. I think you're right. While you're at it, then, I would put a bit of money on Bobbington Boy and the 210 at Chepstow.
Adam, great chatting as always. That, of course, is Adam Gilchrist in London, and this is your Emirates Worldview. Now, what we normally do on the Emirates Worldview is we like giving away money. So R1,000 could go to you. All you have to do is send in a question about the world. If we get that question answered, then the money is yours. So we received this question from Mario, and that's Mario in Grossy Park.
Why was Pluto declassified as a planet? Mario from Grossy Park.
Almost thought you said Plato. Okay, no, Pluto. Why was it declassified as a planet? We almost went to one of those political analysts, but when we figured out it was actually Pluto, we decided to go to Carl Lindemann, a member of the Cape Centre of the Astronomical Society of South Africa, with the answer.
So, what happened to Pluto? Since its discovery in 1930, generations of students learned it was the ninth planet. But in 2006, astronomers took it off the list. How's that fair? First, Pluto's planetary designation started with a misunderstanding. It's at the edge of the solar system, so just a point of light in even the largest telescope. It was first thought to be Earth-sized, but actually it's much smaller, smaller than our moon. Several moons in the solar system are larger. That made Pluto an oddball planet. But the real trouble came in the 1990s. As telescopes became more sensitive, astronomers discovered that Pluto wasn't alone. There's many like it in the same region outside the orbit of the planet Neptune, known as the Kuiper Belt, some 30 to 50 times farther away from the Sun than the Earth. It's home to lots of dwarf planets, as well as smaller leftovers from the creation of the solar system, like Ultima Thule, shown to be a snowman-shaped chunk with the recent New Horizons spacecraft flyby. So, this isn't really about Pluto getting kicked off the A-list. It's found a proper place with a family of others like it. Think of it as more of a homecoming.
I love Carl Lindemann, member of the Cape Central Astronomical Society of Southern Africa. So, Mario in Grossy Park, congratulations, sir. You are R1,000 richer, courtesy of Emirates. Fly Emirates Business Class to experience a new level of comfort.
If you have a question on an interesting topic for Emirates Worldview, send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072-567-1567 or hashtag Emirates Worldview on Twitter. There's more Emirates Worldview on capetalk.co.za.